first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Greetings, Rapids comrades, and welcome to Holding Highline Podcast with Rabbi in the Red. My name, of course, honorable journalist Matt Pollard, who is in no way colluding with Don Garber to promote profitability over the growth of American soccer. We are recording this on the 26th of March, the year of our Lord, 2019. I am joined now by co-host, Rapids comrade, and only slightly filthy Jew, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Rabbi Mark! Rabbi Mark! How goes the Eastern Front of Fatherland?
Did not expect any of this to be happening, but now we do entire podcast in Russian accent. It's wonderful, yes no? Yes no.
Yes no, yes no. Okay, seriously, Mark, okay, we've done our bit, we've put aside everything that, we've acknowledged the existence of the Mueller report that is consuming all of the oxygen in America right now. How are you, my friend?
That was a total shock. I was not prepared for that at all. It just totally came out as like a Matt going full method actor, just all of a sudden. It was shocking.
I did greet the listeners with, greetings, Rapids comrades, last year during, I think it was when we recorded right after the England game, after when they, made it to PKs, but I've never done the full accent in the bit, so.
No, it's funny. I think you do a better Russian accent than most people I know. I'm very proud of my Russian accent, but you did a very good one, and I'm embarrassed by many of my other accents. I think my British accent is horrendous, you know, by comparison. So I'm glad you went Russian. You know, there's no collusion and only mild to moderate obstruction taking place here.
Mm-hmm. I guess on that note, Mark, I have to ask this question. I have heard this several times from some of my other Jewish friends, all independently. And you would relate to this being a general sci-fi nerd. In your opinion, how much is there overlap either in the sound, the tones, or the accents between Yiddish and Vulcan?
Oh, huh. I'm not really up on Vulcan. I think the only significant stretches of Vulcan I ever heard, I think Star Trek 3 has a bunch of Vulcan in it, mm-hmm. And that's not right?
Yeah, cause that's I think that's the first time we meet future Spock, question mark?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's not a whole lot of that, but, so I can't really speak to that. I can definitely tell you that Yiddish and Klingon have nothing in common. I was not familiar with it. Also, you know, like Jews don't generally sit around, discussing, how to derive honor by fighting each other over our women and or our hunt and catch. Like, it's just not a particularly Jewish activity.
Yeah, I think Klingon's the answer to this. Klingon is kind of the answer to the question, what if there were, like, space Neanderthals who then also became Spartans? And that does not seem like your people from the old country in any way, shape, or form.
No. Speaking of Klingon foreheads, did you see Kai Kamara dunk a basketball tonight?
It was absolutely fantastic, Mark, and I think if anything were to happen to the Joker in the playoffs, I think they should seriously consider maybe an inner KSC loan for a game or two, between the Rapids and the Denver Nuggets. I thought it was fantastic. I didn't know Kai could dunk. I figured with his height, he certainly has the physical aptitude in order to do that, but, I thought it was pretty fantastic. And you know, I'd be curious to see what other baller skills he potentially has. You know, who if you had to pick a three-man squad from the Rapids, Mark, to play in an all MLS three-man squad, where say every MLS team picks their three best players to be on a three-man half-court basketball team, is Kai Kamara one of those three? And who do you think are the other two Rapids players who you would put on that team?
Well, before we do that, I just wanted to ask one other question, which is what other Colorado Rapids do you think can dunk? I'm going to go with Axel, and I'm going to go with, at least until maybe the last year or so, Tim Howard, because they're tall and really athletic. Anybody else on the team you think can certainly dunk?
I don't know if anybody else can dunk, but as far as like rim protection and rim action, I have to think with how much aerial Tommy Smith gets on some of his headers that he's pretty good, you know, movement above the rim, you know, maybe a decent layup or at least, you know, being able to box out pretty well. But I think the three that you listed are probably the three most likely to dunk. I can't remember offhand how tall Courtney Ford is. I would say pre-knee injury, I'd probably like him to do that. I'm not sure that I want Courtney Ford actively trying to junk on Kai Kamara these days, especially coming back from injury.
Yeah. All right. So if I'm going to pick a three, I want a little guy. I think I want Tim Howard. Something just tells me that he just is a really good athlete in a lot of respects and is also good at basketball. I mean, he's just at least got the intimidation factor going for him. Kai Kamara, from what we saw tonight, because clearly he's got skills and he's just got height. So now we need like a point guard or someone who's just got a really good handle, and potentially is small. So it's either Dylan Cerner or Diego Rubio. Something tells me that Diego Rubio just has never not played soccer. Like he's like, he wouldn't even, if he got a basketball in his hand, he'd immediately put it on his foot and try to do keepy uppies with it.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too.
Cerna, I feel like probably has played basketball.
Yeah, I'd like Cerna. I'd like maybe Benny Fellhaber to be like the point guard on the second unit, kind of like Jason Kidd type on the team. You know, not playing a whole lot, but a quarterback of the offense as far as that's concerned. Who else? I think we need somebody else who'd be really good on D, like a 3-and-D player.
Nope, don't think we have one. I think it's exactly one of our major problems with the actual team in soccer this year is that we lack a defensive midfielder and therefore we don't have anybody who can just show up and defend.
Indeed. Mark, is there any comments that we want to make before we get onto the actual podcast regarding tonight's U.S. national team game? A 1-1 draw with Chile. Christian Pulisic back on the score sheet.
Nope, still not watching, waiting for the women's team to show up.
Okay, that's fair given the quality. You know, I caught the back end of the game. I had a meeting after work today for Engineers Without Borders. I thought it was a decent performance overall. I'm still just, you know, I like Yedlin coming in there. I still think there's just too many moving parts that are going on. And I think, as much as I know that Greg Berhalter believes in Giassi Zardes and that he's able to build a system where Zardes is going to be a productive striker, I think there's a lot of very good players in MLS, regardless of nationality, that as soon as they get to the international level, just drop off, where their ceiling is being a very good MLS player, but then would not be remotely good with their respective national team. You know, I think of a Chris Wondolowski type, who's able to regularly in MLS when healthy and younger in his years, was able to get 10 goals a season, and I never thought that he was going to be more than a bench guy, maybe the occasional goal in a friendly against like Guatemala national team player. And I just feel like Zardes isn't that to that extreme, but if you want to win the Gold Cup, you're going to have other positions do really, really well. And I'm not sure that Zardes is the out-and-out striker, score a bunch of goals on a team that's going to make it to a World Cup and get out of the group stage. And I'm going to say something possibly really unpopular here, Mark. I still think that as much as I've kind of advocated for saying that Michael Bradley is going to have a role with this team in this World Cup cycle, if nothing else from an advisory standpoint of here's what I did good, here are some of the mistakes I've made in the past, here's how Tyler Adams, you cannot do, not turn into what I have become. Here's how Weston McKennie, you cannot become what I've become. I think Jozy Altidore is that bridge before we start to incorporate, the Josh Sargents of the world and other strikers and maybe even guys we haven't really incorporated. I think Jozy Altidore should play a major part in the next two Gold Cups that occur in World Cup qualifying. And I think, I don't know that, he's about to turn 30 this year, I think. So he'll be, 34 going into the fall of, 33 going into the fall of, you know, 2022. You know, maybe you haven't come off the bench, but I don't know that Giassi Zardes is a starter. If the World Cup group stage started tomorrow, I would be nervous about it being Zardes and the next guy coming off of the bench, you know, being, you know, anybody but Jozy Altidore or Josh Sargent at this point. And I would include Jordan Morris on this just because I think in this system, Jordan Morris is more valuable on the wing than he is as a pure center forward.
I think it's a long way to go to decide whether Josh Sargent is the next coming of the great striker or whether he's just a guy right now. So, but I think it's a good shout to say that Jossie Zardes probably won't be there in 3 years. I think that that's a fair bet just because age and the vagaries of strikers being up or down. I think it's fun to look back and think that, like, we really thought that CJ Sapong was a real possibility at striker, considering that I don't even know where CJ Sapong is right now. I know he's not on Philadelphia.
He's with the Chicago Fire, and he has, like, 2 goals in 4 games played, and they're all, like, totally random poacher, like, totally against the run of play. So he's been decent, Mark, but I agree with you. You know, there's a, you know, like, there's a lot of, to a much, you know, if Freddie Adu is a 10 out of 10 and a 1 out of 10 is a guy who absolutely deserved the hype and to be a striker, like, there's a lot of guys in, there's a lot of guys in MLS right now who are just average players, you know, like the Chris Wondolowski's that I just mentioned, you know, who are in like the 5 to 7 category, who deserve absolutely, you know, they're not even on Greg Berhalter's C team as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. There's a lot of positions to suss out, and it'll be a long time till we know what's going on, which is why I'm not paying attention, because there's so much to pay attention to with the women's national team as they get ready for France and for the World Cup.
Retweet favorite. Speaking, Mark, of positions where there's a lot to be sussed out and a lot of other positions that need some tweaking on some level, the Colorado Rapids were not victorious this past weekend. They played on Saturday at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas against FC Dallas, and they were defeated. Michael Barrios opens the scoring off of a nice little cross pass from Reggie Cannon in the 35th minute to beat Tim Howard at the near post. Tommy Smith gets the team back in the game with a goal off of a deflected shot that went off the post by Kai Kamara. VAR had to take a look at that. There's an MLS account on Twitter that I can't remember the name of, and now I feel bad, Mark, that uses images and screenshots from games and then the positioning of where they know the cameras are in the stadium in order to triangulate and try and determine things where you don't have the ideal angle. So correcting for the angle of the camera. Most of this is used in offsides, but it was determined that the ball was certainly over and it was at least 5¾ inches over the line. I thought the video angles that were shown were pretty obvious even without goal line technology. In any case, Tommy Smith, in his first game back with the Rapids competitively in 2019, opens the score and gets it to a 1-1 game. But then in the 82nd minute, a nice shot from FC Dallas on their counterattack. Tim Howard does everything he can just to make the stop, and the ball falls straight to Ryan Hollingshead, who puts it into the wide open net. You had Dominic Baggi miss a couple opportunities from this one. You had posts from both sides, and for me, Mark, a relatively lackluster performance, especially in the midfield from the Pids. What was your good thing from this past Saturday's loss at FC Dallas?
The good thing was, I think that over a course of a 90-minute away game, if we're grading away games in a different category than we grade any other game, this was a good performance. They only lost by a goal. They kept it tight, and only one of the goals was from the run of play. Second goal that was scored, is that right? Or no, they were both from the run of play. They were both from the run of play. No, I was actually thinking about another play that that came up. I take it back. I still, despite the fact that Baggi had a couple misses, despite the fact that they were outshot and there were better quality chances for Dallas, I think there were long stretches of the game where Colorado were defensively somewhat tough and were offensively on the boards. They never looked, except for I'd say the first 15 minutes, they never looked totally out of it, which is a recurring thing. Colorado against Seattle also were kind of totally out of it and at the beginning and then crawled back in. So I guess it took me a while to kind of warm up to the idea, Matt. So if you want, dear listeners, hopefully Matt will strike everything I said before this point. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, they played like a solid good 60 minutes of soccer, but they warmed up with 20 or 30 not so good minutes of soccer. So, and on the road, that's not so bad. How about you, Matt? What was your good thing?
Tommy Smith returning into the lineup. We've seen some pretty abhorrent performances, from the center backs, both individually and in combination over the course of the season. You know, I thought Tommy Smith was really sound defensively. He didn't really make any mistakes. Neither of the two goals that occurred ultimately happened where he was centrally at fault. I'm not sure that there's anything you really could have done in the goal against Barrios. That was just, you know, sometime a player makes a really fantastic play and you just have to say touche, and that cross in to Barrios to switch the field and then, you know, takes the initial touch to get around the fullback that would have been Keegan and Rosenberry, and just, you know, with all the, you know, it shifted the play where all pretty much everybody else but Rosenberry and Barrios were on that side of the field, to where it's, you know, the people who are saying, oh, Tim Howard, like, you know, that was at your near post, you could have dove for that. He's got to protect for a cross or something else on the other side. I think he was cheating about as much as he could to his right in order to make that. That was just a really fantastic cross, a great first touch, and a perfectly placed ball. I don't think there was anything the Rapids could have done from that situation. Tommy Smith didn't have a whole lot of turnovers in this game, and I saw in multiple instances, I think you tweeted out initially, Mark, the gif of the first initial buildup where they had that four pass sequence. You know, he starts that and he does that for Hudson and in the system much better than I think any other center back does. And as much as, you know, fans like to malign Tommy Smith for some of his 1v1 defending, how he's slow, some fans would say as far as like his personality and approach can be kind of a jerkwad sometimes. You think about him stoking the flames at Minnesota last year and ultimately getting sent off for that. But the fact is the Rapids want to be a possession team. They want to build a little bit more out of the back, and they want support into the midfield when the opportunity presents it. And Tommy Smith is the only player, the only defender, I'll say center back, because I think both the fullbacks have done a good job of that and can and have the skill set to do that, of realizing there's an opportunity, making a pass, and then continuing that with a run that helps support the buildup that ultimately gets the ball from their defensive third into the offensive third. And then ultimately, I still think that the area where Tommy Smith has the most ability to contribute to the team, especially as a defender, is to come in the form of goals and being that second or third option, certainly behind Kari Kamara as far as set piece opportunities. Any chance he has to take advantage of that, you know, there was a reason that he got 3 goals last season, and every single one of them was impactful, and where he was, you know, playing really, really well on corners, and ultimately he took advantage of an opportunity. You know, Kai Kamara, I think, has been really snake bitten in this game, you know, didn't really, and in this season, really, you know, he's had one really good chance and he absolutely buried it, but the rest have been a whole bunch of half chances where he's been starved for service or creating something of his own. You know, he had that sort of flying sidekick opportunity against, Seattle on the cross from Dylan Serna, that if he makes something of that, that could have been something spectacular. So, not necessarily mad at Kai Kamara, because of ultimately the, you know, the result in the play was a goal, but, you know, I had to, you know, if that goal doesn't go in and the Rapids lose that 1-0, that game 1-0, he's probably really kicking himself, and I think he deserves better given the type of player he is, what he's brought to the team and what he's done really in spite of opportunities. You know, he's had a bunch of really, really good chances. You know, if Jack McBean's up there in those exact same positions, I don't think we're talking about Jack McBean at all 4 games into the season. So, I like what I saw from Tommy Smith. Mark, we'll get to this in Ask HTHL. Were you watching the game in Espanol?
I watched it in SAP in English on Twitter, which was, you know, one of the annoying things was it's just a really small box, but that's, but yeah, I was enjoying the odd decision making that the Univision English speaking crew puts on.
Yes. Well, so in any case, in Spanish, I want to say it was maybe 10, 15 minutes into the game. The, Cello was, Marcelo Balboa Cello was on the color commentary for the game. And so the main play-by-play guy was struggling with how to pronounce Axel Schuberg, and it was just a really, really hilarious 30-second exchange where Cello, kind of being in the perfect position given, you know, that he calls the Rapids games in English with our good friend Richard Fleming, sort of explained the process of going from who Buddy to Huberg to Joberg to Schuberg, and having that conversation occur in Spanish, I thought was just really, really amusing. I don't know how much Spanish you speak, Mark, but S and J, like the Schuberg's spelling of his last name in Spanish is about as confusing as you can get without, like, some of the Eastern European names that are just four or five consonants right next to each other. As far as a Spanish speaker trying to figure out how to pronounce that, you'll never see an S come before a J. E, R, and G at the end of a consonant, at the end of a syllable is also very, very uncommon. One thing that actually kind of works, so for example, the chant that Mexican fans will say that is often mistaken for the P word is Hugo, which in spelling is actually starts with a J, but it makes the who sound, and that's let's play. So ultimately the goalkeeper is kicking the ball off of a goal kick. Let's play Hugo. So that almost worked as far as Huberg a little bit more for trying to get the Swedish pronunciation. But that was just really, really funny. You know, Marcelo Balboa is absolutely charming, and to have that conversation, you know, for someone who's been in the Rapid space for the last couple years and kind of seen the evolution of how we've gone about trying to pronounce Axel's last name was really, really amusing, especially if you know Spanish. So I realized that had nothing to do with the game, but it got me a good chuckle, and then the Rapids started playing less bad. So let's move on to bad things, Mark. Where do you want to start?
Well, there's one more good thing, which I forgot to mention, which is Nicolas Mesquita had a pretty good game. If you want, I went and looked it up. He has this roulette move at the 42nd minute at 41 minutes and 26 seconds. If I get a chance, I'll GIF it. He has this really lovely roulette move and then shot. He wasn't totally effective in this game, but he was useful and he was around. So that's my quick addendum to my good thing. But it wasn't that good a thing because he didn't actually turn anything into a key pass or a goal or anything like that. Bad things. Well, I wrote extensively in the Denver Post today about the way that the Anthony Hudson offense, which involves using your fullbacks extensively, creates a lot of space on the wings for opponents to attack into, and that the Rapids didn't close those down. And that created a lot of problems. And that if the team is going to try and use the fullbacks to create more attacking, they need to actually score goals off of it, because what they're giving up is some defending. So that's a big bad thing, which is that their defense was vulnerable. And that was by tactical design. It wasn't because the defenders are bad. It was because the defenders were asked to do a lot of things. That's at least one bad thing. But another bad thing, that we will get to is, that Kellen Acosta, for at least the second game in a row, was pretty much absent. He was just kind of floating around and not being particularly useful. But the third one, and this one is, we're going to talk about Kellen Acosta again later, but we're not going to talk about this again later, so I'll mention it now. This was Keegan Rosenberry's worst game in Burgundy. Everybody gets a couple of bad games a season. Ideally, you get like one, and then you can't really afford to do that too often. But Rosenberry got exploited on a bunch of defensive plays. A lot of the ball ran to his side, and he didn't really close it down. He had a couple of turnovers in bad spots, including one of them, which turned into a goal, which was he was the one who him and Schoberg together kind of produced a series of bad passes and then poor defenses that turned over the ball deep in the Rapids territory, which turned into the second goal. So that was that all together is three bad things at once. And never mind, you know, a fourth potential one, which you kind of mentioned, which is that the midfield wasn't providing service to Kai Kamara like they were supposed to. So, all around, you know, it put together for another loss. Matt, what was your bad thing?
Well, I guess, first of all, I'll say as, someone who believes in peer review, I'll say that based on my publication for Last Word last week, that I certainly concur with what you wrote in the Denver Post, and some of the graphics that you used to visualize things I thought were beneficial. And I agree with the sentiments and conclusions that you made both here now and then in writing, over at the Denver Post. I'm going to start with emergency defending. We saw in the first couple games in the season, the Rapids, just whether it was 1v1 defending or clearing a second ball or doing anything to just play it safe to say, there is a possibility that this leads to a goal. I'm going to do whatever I can. You know, the Carlos Bocanegra approach of any time Carlos Bocanegra, whether it was for club or country, was in a bad situation, he would just play it out. Like, give up the throw-in, give up the corner, live to fight another day, don't make the mistake or don't make the only slightly half-hearted clearance that ultimately leads to a goal. And Axel, you know, if Axel heads out that ball out in the, you know, 88th or 89th minute, whichever it was, you know, for a throw-in, that Ryan Hollingshead goal doesn't happen. And maybe we're talking about the Rapids getting a 1-1 draw in a game where they started out really, really flat and probably didn't deserve to get much from the game. The emergency defending was much, much better two games ago in the game against Sporting Kansas City, but that was with a flat diamond. That was a flat 4-4-2, and you know, Anthony Hudson admitted as much after the game with the media. We're saying, you know, it was really, really flat, but what did that allow to do? That allowed Benny Fellhaber and Jack Price to contribute more defensively, and any time there was a ball pinging around or a second ball in the box or a midfielder or late arriving forward who was splitting the space between the two, one of those two was there, and we didn't really see that. You know, I would say as far as formationally in this game, Mark, you know, I say this game was closer to the 4-2-2-2, you know, with Jack Price being the pure number 8, Cole Bassett kind of assisting, and then Kellen Acosta and Nicholas Mosqueda being more offensive, but you know, I think, as, you know, you wrote about that, basically conceded a lot of the width. I agree with the notion that this was Keegan Rosenberry's worst game of the season so far. I disagree with the notion that maybe either of the goals were his fault or that, you know, I had a dinner with, David Malinfat at the Bulldog, after, the game on Saturday, and we were kind of talking, and, every single goal the Rapids have conceded from the run of play with 11 men on the field this year have ultimately the critical moment has come from the Rapids defensive right side. The build-up play at Seattle was both occurring down the Rapids right side. You know, it was Michael Barrios who was on the Rapids right side of the box on the first goal, and then ultimately that chance creation was on the other side. I just think with the system right now, with the team needing, so much more defensive help, the midfield, the number 8 who normally helps out defensively centrally more is the right-sided one. That's been Benny Fellhaber at times, that's been Cole Bassett, that's been Jack Price, and that inherently makes it such that, you know, in that right third of the field, Keegan Rosenberry's next most available help is maybe a widespread out Nicholas Mosqueda or a widespread out Diego Rubio or an Andre Shinyashiki. He's really on an island defensively in that. And as long as the Rapids are having somewhat of a distorted diamond or a diamond only in name, they're not going to have that number 8 who's out on the right side with Kellen Acosta over on the left that's going to be able to provide that support either in an outlet, in overlapping to allow Keegan Rosenberry to get forward, or ultimately to track back and provide that defensive help, because the Rapids are so dogged and so focused on trying to protect their center backs and not let anything get beat up the middle that they're just committing four players, the two center backs and the two number sixes, to that position that then nobody's able to help Keegan Rosenberry. You know, it's not really his fault that he's getting stretched out wide to block, to, you know, defend against a Paxton Pomykal or certainly a Nicholas Lodero, and then Brad Smith or Ryan Hollingshead overlaps in that play. You know, what's he supposed to do in that situation? You know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's not a winning proposition. He needs help, or somebody else needs to close down whoever ends up beating him in that situation. And nobody really did that to help. You know, I tweeted out, I think the two best players from both teams in the first half, Mark, in this game were Keegan Rosenberry and Ryan Hollingshead. You know, they must have listened to the podcast last week, because they were all about expected buildup and X goal chain. And I thought that was fantastic, but they were kind of, you know, it was one of them gets forward and then gets caught upfield, then allowing the other one to create something. And with the way that the midfield diamond, which is my real bad thing, and the way that it's getting distorted, it's protecting some things, but not as well as it could be or should be. And it's ultimately leaving other weaknesses that other teams strategically have gone about exploiting. And as long as the Rapids are not able to possess the ball and need that one of their number eights to cheat to a number six, and as long as they're not getting production out of Kellen Acosta being a little bit more advanced, the distortion of that shape in the midfield is going to be a distinct weakness that other teams are, and other coaches are going to try and exploit.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, as you kind of point out, how the midfield diamond is working or isn't working. It's so interesting that I feel like people, it's a Rorschach test. It's the ink blot, blob test. People are looking at the midfield and trying to see what they want to see. Matt Doyle's take has been consistent from the beginning of the year, which is Nicolas Mesquita is not good enough as a number 10. There's no true number 10. So you got three guys kind of passing the ball around and one guy floating out in space. You've got the kind of take of like it morphs from flat to diamond, and somebody gets lost and it doesn't quite hold its shape properly from offense to defense. Jake Shapiro for the Denver Post today, or actually this article came out 3 days ago, talked about how it was modeled on the Dutch total football system, which he took that from something that Anthony Hudson said, which I believe that he said, and maybe Anthony Hudson believes, but I actually haven't seen that. Like, I haven't seen the players cycling from side to side and filling in the same ways.
It's individual trading off of roles, not a full every single position drawing arrows to every single other position. With Anthony Hudson, there's no rotation in the midfield under Hudson where Jack Price is going to become the number 10, and no situation where Nicolas Mesquita is becoming the number 6. And in that, it is not midfield diamond total football.
Right, and I agree with that. The way I've seen the diamond it's not really. You can't pick it out and talk about the diamond as a diamond because it's so fluid with the players above it and the players below it, with what I've been talking about with the fullbacks creating width and then creating interplay with them, and Kai Kamara dropping deep so that a midfielder can run through it and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, but it's an interesting question about like what's going on with the diamond and why is the midfield kind of disappearing so regularly from game to game. If you look at the passing maps for the last two games of the Rapids, the midfield is often just the plays are happening by the players all over the field in scattered amounts, and they're not making a large volume of passes. And that actually goes to something that Porik and Hudson talked about in the preseason, which was the desire to make two line passes, line breaking passes. And they often want those line breaking passes to come from the back. So, the Rapids would like to skip the midfield on that first entry pass, go all the way up to the forwards, and then have the midfield run through for either the second ball or to create more on the attack. It's not really happening that much. Or it's not happening enough anyways, but maybe it will as we go. So anyhow, long story short, yes, Matt, I agree with almost all your conclusions about what's going on with the midfield not quite accomplishing everything it wants to, and why Kellen Acosta can't be held fully responsible because he's being asked to do a lot of things, and yet we have to hold him responsible because he's disappearing a little.
He is the highest paid midfielder on this team.
What's the big thing, Matt?
I'm going to talk about teenagers versus teenagers. You know, this was, we saw a lot of homegrowns in this game. You know, it was Dylan Serna at left back and starting to play a lot better in that position. I don't know if we count Kellen Acosta as a homegrown because he wasn't a homegrown with the Rapids, and he's also on a TAM deal. So I don't know if he retains from a roster compliance standpoint, he retains the homegrown status, anymore with that. But then you had Cole Bassett also starting in the midfield. And on the other side, you had FC Dallas starting three teenagers in this game. You know, Paxton Pomykal, I thought, had a decent game in, sort of the holding midfielder role. And then, the FC Dallas ultimately chose to start Jesus Ferreira up top above Arangis and then put Baji out to the wing, which I thought was a really ballsy move, but ultimately worked out. And then, you know, I think I DM'd this to you, Mark, right as I saw the lineup and I saw that Cannon was going to be starting. I didn't really feel very confident about this game just because I thought Cannon was going to lock down that Dallas right, Rapids left channel that was going to create a lot of opportunities. But ultimately, all three of these kids had moments where they looked not so great and other moments where they created opportunities and they figured things out. You had a bunch of teenagers playing against grown men for FC Dallas starting, and they figured things out. And, you know, the Rapids have had maybe some bad luck, as we'll get to Ask HTHL. You know, they've got, they've had a pretty tough schedule as far as quality of opponent. Maybe not, you know, FC Dallas of, you know, yesteryear or anything, but, you know, we've seen Minnesota United figure things out. You know, we saw FC Cincinnati on Sunday figure things out against the New England Revolution where they weren't really playing that well. Like, at some point, somebody is gonna have to break the trend. Kai Kamara is a good enough player. Jack Price is a good enough player. Dylan Serna, Kellen Acosta, etc. Like, one of these guys is gonna have to have an upward blip to say that they figured something out. Otherwise, we're just saying that your average is your ceiling, and your ceiling right now ultimately isn't good enough. FC Dallas started three teenagers and ultimately got a result, and the Rapids continue to rotate the squad, have veteran players, players who know this league, who are familiar with this league, who are more familiar with each other, and they're not making progress. But, you know, hey, you know, Jesus Ferreira came in there and he started above Aranguiz, Dominic Baggi, and Michael Barrios, who are, you know, an excellent group as far as, you know, a midfield three in a 4-2-3-1, and he didn't look out of sorts. We've seen Cole Bassett not look the part at times. We've seen Kellen Acosta shrink in moments at times. It would be nice if any one of these players had whatever gumption, or bravado that FC Dallas is bringing and that other teams around the league have brought to ultimately get results and show that, they should be taken seriously, and at this point we have not seen that from the Rapids, and that is something that is going to need to happen between now and I would say the next 2 months if the Rapids are seriously going to compete for the playoffs in 2019.
And then they took off Jesus Ferreira. I'm pretending like he's Brazilian, Jesus. They took off Jesus Ferreira and they put on Thomas Roberts. Ferreira's 18, Roberts is 17. And Roberts went and had the go-ahead assist on that beautiful look-through pass, right into the line. Just does a stunning amount of talent for a bunch of real teenagers. I mean, you know, literally all these guys are 17, 18, 19 years old. It's ridiculous. All right, I got my big thing. So I put up a poll on Twitter. I don't know why my voice is going away. It's like what happens at the back end of services after I've talked for 4 straight hours. I put up a poll on Twitter to ask the critical question that I thought, is a recurring question at the beginning of a season for Rapids fans, which is, should we panic yet? Right? Is this game an indicator of the team's true nature, or was this a typical tough road game where they play safe, it doesn't work out at the end? And right now, with 71 votes in and 7 hours left in the poll, 54% of Rapids fans who've responded think this is a harbinger of doom, and 46% think this is an away game hiccup. So that's pretty – I don't know what that says. I think it says a lot about the pessimism and the negativity that happens when you support a team like Colorado who – have never really been a favorite to win the league. They've never really been a favorite to come out on top of the league. They've won the league once and it was a big surprise. And they have been good once in the last 9 years and that was a big surprise in 2016. So, Colorado fans are perpetually curled up in the fetal position begging for the beatings to stop. And so they're a little bit afraid. I'm weighing in as this was an away game hiccup. We should give the team a little bit more time, but like, I was really curious to see how fans were reacting to this game. And the answer is slightly more than 50% are deeply concerned that the team is not looking better than they should.
Sample size, Mark. Don't talk to me about big picture implications or anything until we've actually gotten a decent data set. I will happily revisit this question after the Rapids have played 10 games in this season. Let's move on. Mark, this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the Houston Dynamo. We are currently 434th through the 2019 Rapids season. If my math is correct, that reduces down to 217. 15th. The Rapids are still on 2 points and are in eighth in the Western Conference off of 2 draws and 2 losses and have a -3 goal differential. The Houston Dynamo, Mark, meanwhile, are undefeated. They are 2-0-1, good for 7 points, third in the Western Conference with a +2 goal differential. However, all three of their MLS games have been played at home. They have had 2 road games in Champions League and are no longer partaking in CCL after they were eliminated by Tigres a couple weeks ago. They've also played some relatively pedestrian competition. They did not play over the international break. Their most recent game was a couple weeks ago where they won 3-2 over the Vancouver Whitecaps. They have one of our favorite attacking four cores, or I would say big four in attacking in Major League Soccer in the form of Mauro Minotas, Albert Elise, Romel Kyoto, and Tomas Martinez. Their defense is still really, really suspect, and they also have a bunch of injuries. Mark, what are you looking at this game in the battle between the orange and the burgundy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you said it pretty well. So, that their front four is spectacular. And after that, it's just question marks all around. So you've got AJ De La Garza, who, as long as he's healthy, is pretty solid at right back. And then you've got a whole bunch of new players that, it's up to us in the Western Conference to kind of suss out and figure out, are these guys good? Or they just knew. So their backline last game consisted of a guy named Aljaž or Aljaž Struna, who's a Slovenian center back.
I've really liked him in the games I've watched.
Oh, good. Kevin Garcia, who I don't know anything about. And Adam Lundqvist, who is a 25-year-old left back, who has been pretty good in terms of the offense he's contributed. He's given some really good fantasy performances. And then you've got Matias Vera and Boniek Garcia in the midfield. Boniek Garcia has played wide midfield. He's played fullback. He's played center mid, and now he's playing, at least according to this, as a holding mid. He also has really cute twin boys, which is totally worth looking up on the Instagram. So, and most importantly for Rapids fans, this will be Marlon Harrison's first return to Colorado in the colors of another team. So that'll be interesting. And Houston might also be using off the bench or to start, Tommy McNamara.
Tommy Mac!
So much fun to watch when he's playing well. And Darwin Serrin, who's a really, solid midfielder. So the team has depth. They have talent. They have 2 goalkeepers who both could be, number ones, which is Tyler Derrick and Joe Willis. They'll probably start Willis because he's been getting the bulk of starts since Tyler Derrick had a disciplinary issue last year. I believe it was some kind of run-in with the law. And so Houston is talented, exploitable, and they typically come into Colorado and, it's a fairly even game. So that's what I'm seeing.
I think this game is really intriguing from a tactical standpoint, Mark, because I think both teams are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place where the one thing that they need to do or aspire to be offensively puts them in a really, really good opportunity to expose and take advantage of the opponent's weakness, but then also immediately exposes their weakness the most. I will be shocked if Wilmer Cabrera comes in and has his team do anything but bunker and look to counter, given the talent that they have, and especially playing at altitude. And this will be their first MLS game away from BBVA Compass Stadium. So I expect them to come in, be defensive, try and withstand the Rapids attack. So inherently, the Rapids are going to have a lot of the ball in this game, where I think other teams have maybe pressed them and forced them to distort the diamond in the various ways that we've described it, you know, as a Rorschach test. I don't think that Houston's going to do that in the same way. I think Houston's going to have, you know, is going to draw their line of confrontation maybe just inside the final third on the field, and then they're going to look to counter as soon as they get a good opportunity, especially if either of the fullbacks are up. The Houston is doing that because they've got some pretty old guys in central defensive midfield and a defense that is still figuring itself out and definitely, suspect. Houston does have a number of injuries going into this game. Mark, unfortunately, we will not be getting to see DeMarcus Beasley play at left back on Saturday. He had a left knee injury that he had surgery for and is going to miss the next couple of weeks. And then Maynard Figueroa, who I think, we hyped up as possibly a pickup for the Rapids before he ultimately decided to stay with Houston. He has a right ankle injury, and those are probably, other than AJ De La Garza, those are probably the two best defensive players on the Houston Dynamo. So they're going to look to protect that defense. That's going to give the Rapids a lot of the ball. That's going to allow them to get the ball comfortably into the offensive half and get numbers forward. But, and then they're, you know, maybe that allows them to get set piece opportunities where, the Dynamo are not very good, in my opinion, defensively on set pieces. Tommy Smith, Kai Kamara, let them eat. But as soon as somebody passes the ball over and AJ De La Garza hits an outlet pass to Albert Elise, you know, it's hold on to your butts because here comes La Pantera and Tomas Martinez and, you know, Mara Minotas, who scored 20 goals in MLS last year, who's an absolutely fantastic player. And then normally Romo Cabrera of, I would say his, you know, his Mount Rushmore four between Elise, Martinez, Minotas, and Kyoto. Normally three of those are starters and then one of them subs on for the other one. So they always have a rotation. So they're not necessarily putting so much on those guys and they don't have anything off the bench. And if they do need something centrally off the bench, well, I don't know. He's a counterattacking player. Certainly if they want to possess the ball a little bit more and build up, like Tommy Mack, I think is going to have a resurgence. With the Houston Dynamo this year. And if they want some speed on the wings, you're telling me that Marlon Harrison is going to be excited for this game and know how to prepare his body for altitude to try and beat the team that, you know, effectively, you know, sold him for chopped liver. So this is a really interesting game in that, you know, if I ask Anthony Hudson and Wilmer Cabrera and I say, what's the way you want to play? They answer that question and they're going to say that immediately allows us to take advantage of the opponent's biggest weakness, but then also exposes us for what they do really well against our biggest weakness. You know, do you try, it's the, you know, do I, you know, do I try to do what I'm best at, but then immediately expose what I'm weakest at rather than try and prevent the opponent from doing what they do well and protecting my best, my biggest weakness. And in that, I think this is a really interesting game tactically. I think the other thing I see just from a shape standpoint is Houston's historically played a 4-2-3-1. We saw the 4-2-3-1 in Seattle from the Sounders, and then also last week with FC Dallas. And that inherently, just from a positional standpoint, if you just look at the actual formation chart on a box score and how it lays out, that inherently gives two midfield players who can create conflict with the underneath striker and with the number 10, and inherently gives somebody for whoever that player at the base of the diamond has to deal with. The Rapids, only way they really dealt with that was by distorting the shape, and I don't know how they're going to deal with that. Now, maybe if Houston's just sitting so far back defensively, you don't worry about that. You let the center backs and then Jack Price, you know, allow Houston to split the lines, and then you worry about what's going on further upfield. But that's something to where, you know, if for some reason Vera and Boniek Garcia are able to completely dominate Nicholas Mosqueda or Acosta or possibly the two in, you know, a joint number 10 role, that's not really going to be good for the Rapids. You know, just from the rock, paper, scissors of generally what formations do really, really well, a defensive 4-2-3-1 is not conducive to being a possession 4-4-2 diamond and just doing well from where the numbers end up stacking up.
Yep, I really like what you said about Houston as a counterattacking team. They've tried to evolve a little bit last year because everybody in MLS knew that they wanted to give up the ball and let you have it. In the Rapids' four first matches of the year, they pretty much weren't allowed by their opponent to hold on to the ball and be the dominant possession team. So if you're right, and if Houston lets Colorado have the bulk of the ball, that could really be a good thing for Colorado. The Rapids might finally get to do their offense the way they want to and try and break through without being pressured upfield in a high press or pressured in ways that they haven't wanted to. Only Sporting Kansas City in the third game gave the Rapids a little bit of time on the ball after Sporting took the lead. So we'll see. I think it'll be a different game than the first four games. because it's its home, and because Houston is a very different team than either Portland or Sporting.
Well said, Mark. Okay, let's go to predictions. What is your scoreline prediction? And give us a rundown of how and where you think we'll see Marlon Hairston on Saturday.
It's either going to be 3-1 or 3-2. I think the Rapids win this one. I think Colorado will do a lot of what you said, which is possess the ball and use it to beat up Houston. And I also think that they will at some point have a brain fart and completely lose either Romel Kyoto or Albert Elise. If you would like to bet against Colorado on fantasy, picking Elise or Manotas is usually a good idea. I think the odds that Marlon Hairston gets a goal and celebrates at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in front of all the fans is low. I think he'll get some time at the end of the first half, but I don't, at the end of the second half, but I, you know, it, you don't see Marlon score a lot of goals in the last couple of years. So, I wish the best for him. I want him great success. I want that success to come anywhere else but against Colorado in Commerce City.
Mm-hmm. I think Hairston will probably start on the bench in this game. He's been mostly a substitute right midfielder, for the Houston Dynamos, but I think that we will see him relatively early on in the second half. I think, you know, whichever one of the Houston counterattacking Mount Rushmore four, doesn't start, I think we'll probably see him and Hairston certainly by the 65th minute at the absolute latest, unless Houston's absolutely dominating the game. I'll take a 3-1 win in this one for the Rapids market. You know, at some point this dam has to break. There has to be an offensive explosion. Give me Kai Kamara on a header off of a corner. I'll say one of Nicholas Mosquito or Kellen Acosta gets their first goal of the season. I won't make a prediction on the third one. I do think that Houston will be able to nick something on the counter, and I think it'll probably come from them exploiting the matchup where you'll have a De La Garza at their right back position and Albert Elise probably combining, maybe one outletting to the other or an overlap between the two. Against Dylan Serna, who's maybe up forward, and Kellen Acosta, who will also be on that left side. I don't know that this is a matchup, again, that's really good for Acosta, given what defensively he might have to do, given the help that Dylan Serna might need against a beast like Elise. And then certainly Ade De La Garza is going to be really, really solid defensively. I think if there's anybody who's going to have a breakout game, it's going to be Keegan Rosenberry, who's not going to have to face run DMB in this game. Coincidentally, Mark, when he was at Puebla, DeMarcus Beasley's nickname was actually El Flash, which I think is a really, really good one. Okay, let's move on from the Houston Dynamo preview, and let's get to Ask HTHL, Mark, and we'll start with a historic one on Holding the High Line. Apparently, hosts are allowed to ask HTHL, so this one comes from this guy at soccer_rabbi named Mark Astor Goodman, who I've never heard of, and is probably a total soccer jabroni. Listening to the Rapids match this past week, English or Spanish? Hashtag MLS SAP, hashtag long live the white bullet. Mark, I know we talked about this earlier. Your take on just generally, do you watch games in Spanish? Do you prefer to use the SAP function? Do you get a kick out of hearing Andres Contor? What is your take on enjoying the beautiful game in Spanish or other languages?
The two guys on Univision who call the game in English have been well maligned around MLS circles for being goofballs and making really terrible mistakes. They have mispronounced player names regularly over the 3 years that I've listened to them, and they have also just made some really weird decisions.
They're goobers.
Yeah, they make and they've rotated the color guy. Paul Caliguri did it for a year and was just awful. I mean, he was unbearable. He would like his number one thing to do was to see something that the refs called and then to just scream about it and disagree with it vehemently. And I would watch and it'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. That was an absolutely clear foul. I can't believe you're saying it's not a foul. He literally murdered him with both of his cleats up. I don't even know we're watching the same game. And thankfully they removed him after time, because that was really his only function on the crew, was to mispronounce names and to make bad foul calls. I forget the lead guy's name, but he's also toned it down a lot. He used to be
Sebastian Salazar, I think.
Yeah, Sebastian Salazar. he used to be spinning all these really funny witticisms like, you know, the white bullet is spinning around the green circle or the green square. And it would be like, dude, like you're in trying to invent new phrases and you're not Ray Hudson and you've got to dial it back. And the other thing is that there's a certain degree of like Homerism. This is maybe going to sound impolitique, but there's a Homerism for L tree players that they exhibit that I feel is like a little over the top. They just get super excited. Like any chance to talk about Carlos Vela, they will talk about Carlos Vela. Any chance to talk about Gio dos Santos or Jonah dos Santos, they will do it. You know, it's just a big, big deal for them. And sometimes they will just go on and on and on about a player like that. And you'll be like, hello, there's a game on the field and a Mexican player hasn't touched it in 15 minutes. And they'll talk about it anyway. So it's that's their downsides. The upsides is I'm kind of getting accustomed to it after 3 years and I'm really kind of enjoying it in a perverse way. Whereas a game in Spanish, I really enjoy it because there's a musicality to it. I speak a little bit of Spanish, but they speak so fast and I barely understand any of it. And so I can enjoy it, but I can't really understand it. So, when I'm really fed up with the SAP team, I will switch over, to listen in Spanish and I will enjoy it. And occasionally I'll just pick a game and just do it all in Spanish. Not because I expect to learn any language from it, but just because the musicality and the pacing that they use, the way they inflect, the way they punctuate and like emphasize is just really it adds to the game rather than subtract from it. What about you, Matt? How do you get down with English versus Spanish?
Any opportunity I have where it's in Spanish and it's just not worth the technical hassle of fumbling around with the remote or having to have Twitter and tab open and have it maximized, I prefer to listen to it in Spanish. I would say at my peak, whether it was going all the way through 4 years in high school, having a lot of Mexican friends growing up, and then just, you know, being in communities where if I wanted to seek out people who wanted to speak in Spanish with me was relatively easy, whether just help me learn the language or in some cases it was actually easier for us to converse in Espanol than in Ingles. That was beneficial. So, you know, I was conversational enough to where I was actually able to get something out of the broadcast when I was younger. I would say since moving to Colorado and not having to use it regularly and not needing it in an academic sense, it certainly diminished. You know, there's, you know, occasionally I'll hear something in Spanish, you know, from one of the players. Diego Rubio, last home game, answered a couple questions in Spanish, and I heard him say "La verdad." I'm like, "Oh, right. That means the truth." You know, so you know, there's a lot of vocabulary that's lost. When I'm cognizant and able to anticipate what I'm saying, I speak in, I would say, a crudely watered down Mexican accent. And you know, when I have to think about things, I, you know, get much more más despacio, and some of my gringo does end up coming out. I'd say, you know, from the game on Saturday and in general, whether it's Liga MX games or MLS in Espanol, you know, I probably get about a third of it as far as the content, and I know enough about the league and what's going on in the game that I'm able to fill it out to where, you know, I get something out of it from a color commentary standpoint, from them bringing stuff in or, you know, anything that is asked or said by one of the sideline reporters. I will say again, just growing up in a Hispanic community, that, you know, the soccer that they watched was definitely south of the border. I was just, my first exposure to Liga MX and to El Tri was in Spanish. So I just inherently, unless, the Mexican national team is playing the United States or it's not possible or again, convenient for me to find the game in Spanish, I'll watch or listen to them in English. But, you know, if I absolutely have the preference and I've got two convenient channels, one showing Mexico not playing the United States in Spanish, one playing in English, I'll absolutely listen to it in Spanish. Folks, if you have not had an opportunity to hear him before, particularly covering the Mexican national team at the Azteca or any major tournament, Copa America or a World Cup, Andres Contor is one of the golden voices of this generation of soccer commentators. And, you know, I'm not just saying that just about his goal call, that I will not even attempt to to impersonate and thus defile the sanctity of it. It's absolutely fantastic. He's a great commentator, and you don't have to understand any Spanish. If you speak the beautiful game and understand what's going on, you will be able to have a conversation and listen to and get something out of Andres Contor. He's a fantastic character and poet of the game, and how he accents and brings something out to it on the broadcast. And I absolutely love listening to him. And before you die, you have to listen to him, even if you do not speak one word of the language. Let's go on to our next Ask HTHL, Mark. This one comes from Purple Box, and this is asking about strength of schedule for the Rapids. And so Purple Rocks, asks, hashtag Ask HTHL, reaching here through four matches, how much do results fall on the opponent's quality? The Rapids this year, Mark, so far have played four teams that made the playoffs last year. They have played two recent MLS Cup winners in the Seattle Sounders and the Portland Timbers. They have played Sporting Kansas City, who is the last team standing in hashtag Sporting Fit in CONCACAF Champions League. I'll put an asterisk next to FC Dallas just because Dallas is a very different team this year than they were last year, and I don't have them making the playoffs. To your Twitter poll about asking about panic, Mark, how much of this is the Rapids just really running the gauntlet as far as difficult road games are concerned and teams that were going to play them well at DSG Park?
I think with the exception of Seattle, the teams that we have played will all finish mid-table in the Western Conference. And this is not, Colorado is not experiencing struggles because they're playing good teams. They're experiencing struggles because the entire Western Conference is almost equally good. I think the teams at the bottom of the West, last year, are still going to be really tough outs this year for Colorado. San Jose is terrible right now, but they'll be better by the end of the season than they were at the beginning. Minnesota is better than they have been in the past 2 years, and so you can't count on them to roll over them and just get points. The Galaxy didn't finish in the playoffs last year, and you know that they've got it together a little bit better this year under Guillermo Barlos Chalota than they have in the past. So I just don't think I've never, and this is a bias, I'll be honest, I've never been a big strength of schedule analyst type guy. I just don't think that we can really know early or middle of the season what a team is doing, and whether it's an indication that they're really a good team or really not a good team. So right now I think Colorado is, it's not in the hands of their opponents. Their struggles have been in their own hands, and they need to kind of figure them out and play at a slightly higher level than they're playing at. They have the talent on the field. They just need to put it together.
I agree that the issue is definitely multifaceted. I think certainly the quality of the opponents has played a role. For me, Mark, the Western Conference is almost, you know, it's almost like a crushed soda can, where I think LAFC is definitely at the top. I would say Sporting Kansas City is nipping at their heels. I think Vancouver and San Jose are really, really bad. And then pretty much any other team in that group, you could convince me they're going to be 3 points out of the playoffs or 3 points above the red line, and I wouldn't be able to, you know, maybe Portland has a really, really bad run with all their road games before Providence Park opens up after being renovated, and maybe right. Diego Valeri tweaks his hamstring. Like, okay, if that happens, yeah, I wouldn't be betting money that the Portland Timbers are going to make the playoffs. You know, Zlatan hasn't played since the home opener. If he doesn't play well, I don't know that the LA Galaxy are going to make the playoffs. You know, Minnesota's looked really, really good. They're opening up Allianz Field. They could definitely make the playoffs, but I'm still not convinced Adrian Heath knows how to coach defense. And look, they're one Ozzie Alonso, back spasm and one Aiko Parra hamstring away from being just as bad defensively as they were last year. What is that? That's just Darwin Quintero poning noobs and their defense giving up goals in a different and better looking stadium. So you could convince me, outside of the four teams that I mentioned, the two at the top and the two at the bottom, I think you can convince me anybody in that group is going to finish 10th. Ninth, 2 spots out of the playoffs. You can convince me that they're going to finish 6th, 1 spot above the, you know, 1 spot, or I guess 2 spots above the red line, 1 spot above the team that gets last in. And I would say that that's definitely plausible based on just one or two key events or distinct run of form. But I also agree with you that I think that, you know, when the enemy, when there is no enemy within, the enemies outside can do you no harm. And the Rapids are definitely doing themselves harm right now. Albeit not intentionally. They haven't had healthy center backs. They've got a bunch of new forwards, and they definitely, as we've, you know, prognosticated for almost a month now, and as we're going to talk about more specifically with a certain player to close out the show, there's a lot of things going on in the midfield that are the Rapids not having their act together more so than somebody else doing something to the Rapids. Let's move on to our last KHDHL, Mark. This has been a topic we have discussed in context of events and in context of games, but not necessarily as its own little mini segment or as a part of Ask KHDHL. So we have two questions this week regarding Kellen Acosta. The first one comes from Andrew Foster on Twitter, saying, is Acosta the man or just a man? What factors are going to make him blossom? Is it a teammate support issue or something else? And then we got a nice email from Matt Cleveland, first time he's emailed the show. One reason Acosta fell out of favor in Dallas was he would disappear in games for long stretches of time. He seems to be doing that for the Rapids now. I've been trying to watch if other teams are taking him out of the picture or if he's just drifting in and out of games. What do you guys think? Mark, you know, I realize that was a big word salad. How do we go about attacking the fact that Kellen Acosta was supposed to be one of the big acquisitions for this team? He is not playing like it, and he so far has not been living up to his new pay bump of being a targeted allocation player in 2019.
I guess I'm still in the wait and see phase, which is ridiculous because it's four games and it's time to start seeing. I don't know what is happening. I don't understand if he is consistently running into the wrong place. I mean, I've watched him on some of the Rapids' best plays of the season in which he hasn't taken part. I mean, I often gif a moment that the Rapids have in a game where they're like looking really good, and Acosta's typically not part of it. I feel like part of it's tactical, that the team's identity right now is to have a player, like a forward, drop back for the ball, or to get the ball to Mezquita and have him kind of be the fulcrum for the offense. It just feels like Acosta doesn't have like a really clear role where he's going to bring the ball up or he's going to make the linking pass with the front line or he's going to make the late run, or it doesn't, I don't see him doing a thing that's like, oh yeah, that's what Kellen Acosta is supposed to do on this play or in this offense or as part of this formation. Like, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know what his role is yet. And I would surmise that maybe he doesn't know what his role is yet.
I think that there's a bunch of things playing on here, Mark. I think some of it may be psychological, not in a bad way for him, but I think he came in after the trade thinking like, okay, I'm out of Dallas. I'm in a situation where a club wants me to be one of the big players, but he was also on a bad team that at that point was already pretty much not making the playoffs. Like, you know, the best thing that he was going to do was come in, provide, you know, a late season bump and leave the fans feeling better about next year, at least in the context of him or what he could help the team do. And he absolutely did that, but he was also doing it with no expectations, with a team that had no expectations, and also didn't really have anybody else around him who was playing well or who was a good player. You know, he had to be that guy, and he shouldered so much of the responsibility. I think positionally and tactically, the coaching squad and, you know, are putting more on Nicholas Mezquita and maybe trying to not necessarily shove Kellen Acosta into a distinct role, but I just think he's playing less free. Whereas it was, let me spread out with the field a little bit more. Let me try and help the offense because the offense needs help. Jack Price, get me the ball. Everybody else get out of my way. You know, I will do something to help you, either for myself or for helping the team. And I just think maybe he's being deferential to Mezquita. Maybe just the rotations of the fact that, oh, we're starting out in a diamond. Oh, it's not working. We got to go to the 4-2-2-2. But then, you know, I'm boxed up against a D-man and I just can't get any space going and we're not moving the ball well enough, you know, further downfield in order for me to actually do what I'm capable of doing. And then, you know, when the Rapids go out to a full flat 4-4-2, you know, I think that's about the worst use you could have for Kellen Acosta in any one of those three formations, in any one of those three positions. I think Kellen Acosta at the base of the diamond in a 4-4-2 diamond is better than Kellen Acosta as a defensive left midfielder in a bunker and counter 4-4-2. So I think some of it is tactical. I think some of it is the team kind of forcing him into a certain role, just given everything else that's going around, whether it's the injuries of the center back, you know, the inability for the team to possess the ball and move it up midfield, some of which is related to Costa, some of which is system, some of which is other positionally. But also, Mark, you know, we've seen Benny Fellhaber and Jack Price play well together. We've seen Kellen Acosta last year and this year play well with Jack Price. At the top of your head, Mark, how many sequences do you recall of Nicholas Mesquita and Kellen Acosta combining well?
None.
Exactly. We haven't seen a whole lot of combination from them. And, you know, if Acosta is the slightly more offensive eight, and whether it's Cole Bassett, Jack Price, Benny Fellhaber is the more defense eight, the player in that midfield diamond who he's going to have the most connection to, you know, the biggest arrow in terms of either play back and forth or rotation a la Total Football, as we were talking about earlier, is going to be with Nicholas Mesquita. But so far we've seen it. It's kind of Nicholas Mesquita is on his island as the attacking right midfielder in the various positions we've seen, and Kellen Acosta has been isolated on an island in his own left midfield role. We haven't seen any linking between the two of them. I don't know if that's positional. I don't know if that's just them getting used to each other. I don't know if that's just other things going around or teams just trying to cut that connection off so that the ball never gets to a Diego Rubio or a Kai Kamara. I did speak with Nicholas Mesquita after the last home game. His English is okay. He does have a bit of an accent. I wonder if maybe there's a language barrier. I haven't asked Acosta growing up in Dallas, growing up at FC Dallas, where there's a strong Spanish influence, and obviously Oscar Pereja at times preferred to do coaching in Spanish as English, how good his Spanish is, but maybe there's a disconnect there in terms of communication, whether it's language-based or otherwise. But that relationship isn't really solid, and that is going to have to get better if this team is going to be successful with Kellen Acosta as a left midfielder and Nicholas Mesquita as a number 10 in a 4-4-2 diamond. I do agree with the sentiment that I think they have been running into a little bit of a buzzsaw. You know, he hasn't really had any beneficial matchups in terms of who's the weaker number eight I'm going up against in this situation, or who's the player, you know, who's going to get caught upfield that's going to help me. You know, he's been pinned up against really, really good two-way fullbacks. Kevin Leerdam is a fantastic outside back for the Seattle Sounders. You know, he had to go up against Graham Zusi and Matt Beisler and Ilya Sanchez and Roger Espinosa. Bobby Warsaw for MLSsoccer.com wrote an article, I want to say about a year ago, depicting some of the rotations that happened, particularly on that side of the field for Sporting Kansas City. That's a situation that I would not have expected Tyler Adams to dominate, and I'm not surprised that Kellen Acosta wasn't successful in that game against Sporting Kansas City. And, you know, as I said, he had to go up against Reggie Cannon, on Saturday. So I think other teams are definitely keying on him. I think if there's any one of the midfielders that they're scared of offensively, it is Kellen Acosta. But look, Kellen, you're the highest paid midfielder on this team, pending what, maybe salary bumps that Jack Price got last year or what, Benny Fellhaber was. Those are the only two players off the top of my head that'd be remotely close to what Kellen Acosta's making, if we're believing in reports. And this is a guy who's trying to compete for the U.S. national team opportunities, who got sent home early from January camp and wasn't called into this camp, where Tyler Adams is balling out for RB Leipzig. Weston McKennie is playing well at Schalke. You know, we all know what Will Trapp is capable of doing with Columbus Crew. Michael Bradley is a veteran and, you know, has started and capped in World Cup games, you know, and Sebastian Legette is playing well with the LA Galaxy and had some good performances as well. I think Kellen Acosta is comfortably behind all five of those guys. If you're the sixth best box-to-box midfielder in the U.S. national team pool, barring massive injuries or a serious change in the tactical approach, you're never getting called up. Not for a major World Cup qualifier, not for a Gold Cup. Maybe you make the preliminary roster because there's 35 men. I think there's a lot going on. I think some of it is internal relating to Acosta. Some of it is tactical that Hudson's going to have to sort out. Some of it is relationship, whether it's other players around the field making things better. It make things easier for Kellen Acosta, and I think a lot of it is directly on the relationship or lack thereof that Kellen Acosta of Nicholas and Mesquita have come, and whether they're playing in a 4-2-2, a 4-4-2 diamond, or maybe they don't have a relationship if Acosta's all the way on the left and Mesquita's all the way on the right in a flat 4-4-2, but either of the other two formations, they've got to get better at linking up, and I don't think the Rapids are going anywhere in terms of being a possession attacking oriented team until that happens.
Yep.
Anything else that we want to say on Kellen Acosta, or shall we get out of here, Mark?
Nope.
All right, listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out our Rapids and general soccer musings at the Denver Post and Last Word on Soccer, respectively. You can subscribe to Holding the Highline wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Rapids 96 Podcast or Holding the Highline. We're on pretty much any podcatcher you could want us on. Tweet us at Rapids 96 Podcast. And if you've got an Ask HTHL that is longer than 280 characters, or if you want to get in touch in more detail, email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com for a special deal with the Denver Post where you can get unlimited digital access for 3 months for 99¢ a month. Head on 99¢ per month. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL. Listeners, we'll see you next week where hopefully we're talking about Dylan Cerna and Kellen Acosta absolutely dominating AJ De La Garza and Albert Elise, and the Rapids getting their first win in competitive play in 2019. We'll see you next week.
Peace.